Welcome to WCG Talks Trials, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of clinical research, sharing the latest trends, insights, and best practices from experts across the industry. In each episode of WCG Talks Trials, we'll explore a different area of the clinical trial industry while featuring a diverse range of clinical research and medical professionals. If you're passionate about advancing clinical research, improving patient outcomes, and driving healthcare forward, then WCG Talks Trials is the right podcast for you. We are so glad you could join us today.
Hello, and good morning. Here today with Kelly Fitzgerald, Vice President of IRB and IBC and the Executive Chair. We're discussing the new FDA regulations for waiver of consent. There was a guidance out previously, but now FDA has officially added to the regulations of their promise. So, Kelly, this new regulation, which is 50.22, are there any differences between the HHS, the Health and Human Services, long-extending definition of a waiver of consent and this requirement, and FDA's now?
The new FDA waiver of consent regulations include waivers of or alterations of consent if the clinical investigation involves no more than minimal risk to the subjects, the clinical investigation could not practically be carried out without the waiver, if the clinical investigation involves using identifiable private information or identifiable biobit specimens, and the clinical investigation could not practically be carried out without using that identifiable format, and the waiver of alteration will not adversely affect the rights and welfare of the subjects, and whenever appropriate, the subject or legally authorized representative will be provided with additional pertinent information after participation. So those match exactly with the common rule requirements for a waiver of consent. When the rule change was first proposed by FDA, it did not include that provision about the identifiable private information or biospecimens, but in the final rule that's been published, that is included. And so the waiver requirements match exactly now between FDA and the common rule.
Well, that's excellent. Harmonization is what we were promised and are getting. Going off of that, in the first requirement, does FDA have any guidance or anything else for what is minimal risk in a clinical investigation?
Under FDA regulations, minimal risk is defined in 50.3K to mean that the probability and magnitude of harm or discomfort anticipated in the research are not greater in and of themselves than those ordinarily encountered in daily life or during the performance of routine physical or psychological examinations or tests. And the common rule and FDA regulations have shared the same definition of minimal risk since 1991. The definition was not changed with the new regulation, but FDA does plan to publish guidance to assist IRBs in applying the criteria for waivers or alterations of informed consent in the future. And that guidance intends to include some additional information on the types of research activities that might involve no more than a minimal risk to subjects, to give some examples and some additional guidance for IRBs.
In between that time, before the guidance come out, do you have any recommendations for people submitting to the IRB?
I wouldn't change whatever definition you're operating under for minimal risk. It's not changing. You can always reach out and ask for guidance from an IRB, but generally you're going to use that standard of what somebody encounters in everyday life and use that as your starting point for your definition of minimal risk. And IRBs may differ. Some IRBs may have different ideas about what they consider minimal risk, and I'd say stay in good communication with your IRB about that.
Similarly, does FDA have any guidance on the practicability requirement?
So in the preamble of the proposed rule, FDA stated that if scientifically sound research can practicably be carried out using only consenting subject, FDA believes it should be carried out without involving non-consenting subjects. So if you can practically do the research and get consent, you should get consent. But impracticable doesn't mean impossible. So if the research does not have to be impossible in order to enable you to waive consent. And so recruitment of consenting subjects, some examples of what practicable means are that recruitment of consenting subjects does not bias the science, and the science is no less rigorous as a result of restricting it to consenting subjects, or that the research is not unduly delayed by restricting it to consenting subjects. A clinical investigation could not practicably be carried out without a waiver of alteration of informed consent based on the unavailability of certain subjects in an investigation to give consent for a new investigation, for example, if subjects are lost to follow-up. And when restricting the research to the subjects available to provide consent would compromise the scientific or ethical integrity or cause undue delay of the investigation. Practicability should be assessed on a case-by-case basis, considering the unique factors associated with the clinical investigation, things like its aims, its populations, and the impact of on its scientific validity if informed consent were required. And so you could have a case where you could presumably obtain consent, but if certain subjects refuse to give consent, if that makes the research useless, or it would mean that it's not contributing to generalizable knowledge at all, you might be able to make the case that it's impracticable to get consent because you couldn't do the research and obtain consent.
Thank you very much. Very helpful. And similarly for IRBs, or the differences between IRBs, your best option would be to send it to the IRB and work with the IRB for consideration there.
Again, and IRBs may differ on their comfort level with what impracticable means, and that can be frustrating sometimes. But I would say get in conversation with the IRB, provide justification for your position on why the research can't be done without consent, if that's your position, and back it up with the reasons why it wouldn't be scientifically valid.
Great. So biospecimen research does not technically involve a human subject, and questionable if it meets the definition of a clinical investigation. So does FDA speak to this specifically?
FDA's definition of human subject does not specifically reference biospecimens as the definition does in the common rule. FDA's existing IDE regulations refer specifically to specimens in the definition of subject. The language is that subject means a human who participates in an investigation, either as an individual on whom or on whose specimen an investigational device is used, or as a control. And FDA's IDE regulations cross-reference Part 50 with respect to requirements for obtaining informed consent. And the agency's longstanding position is that FDA-regulated device investigations using biospecimens are subject to informed consent requirements under Part 50. And so they did include that statement in their waiver regulations relating to identifiable biospecimens. FDA does consider human specimens to be human subjects. It does not mean that this research, it does not require IRB review, and it does mean that you can consider it for a waiver of consent. And a lot of biospecimen research can be considered to meet the criteria for a waiver of consent under these rules.
Great. Thanks so much, Kelly. This is a great insight into this change and a lot of help in just the concept in general. I don't have any other questions, but I hope everyone on the listening today comes back and listens to us again. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of WCG Talks Trials. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform as we continue to explore different areas of the clinical research industry. As always, we encourage you to join in the conversation. Feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future topics you'd like to hear on the show by visiting us at wcgclinical.com/podcast. We're here to serve as a trusted resource as we work to improve lives and accelerate clinical research together.